Genesis 32, page 47. We've come through Abraham and Isaac. We're at Jacob. We've studied Jacob and the birth and the birthright and him leaving town and finding a wife, finding Rachel. The work that he did for Laban, his growth, his expansion, and now he is returning. In verse 1, the Bible says Jacob went on his way and the angels of God met him. Isn't that something? The angels of God met him. He understands now, and he'll say it over in verse number 10. I am become two bands. He understands there's not just what we see, but there's that which is beyond. There's that other, what we say, dimension, but that spirituality. When we can understand that we are spiritual beings in a body, we'll figure out life. But as long as we figure that we are bodies with a spiritual element, we're wrong. We just don't get it. You were created. God breathed into Adam the breath of life, and man became a living soul. And the moment that you took your first breath, you became a living soul. Now, that means that God had designed you and created you with a purpose and with a function and with a plan. And now you were ready to enact that plan, being born and being alive. And so then after that, what? We grow in the physical nature. Jesus grew, the Bible says, in knowledge and in favor with God and man. But are we growing that way? Are we growing just in a physical form, in an earthly form, in a human form? Or are we growing spiritually? It's so easy to not grow spiritually. Because the world tends to nurture the flesh. The world doesn't tend to even focus on the spirit. And that's why so many people are distressed and depressed, because they're not focused on the spiritual element, they're focused on the physical element. But Jacob now realizes that he's more than that. He's become two bands. The angels of God met him. He senses God's presence. He senses God's protection and assurance. In verse 2, when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." He called the name of that place Mahanaim. Or two hosts is what that means. Verse 3, Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau. I'd like to just tell you the story. Can I just tell you the story without reading verse by verse? And you can read it at home. And I know, like Brother Butch said, we're a Bible church, and I like reading the Bible. But let me, if I could, just tell you the story, and maybe we'll read a few along the way. But what happens is, in verses 3 through 5, Jacob sends messengers to Esau. He wants to come home. And he's basically asking permission. He's saying, "Is it okay?" Remember when Noah released that dove out of the ark? What happened? She returned, didn't she? She came back. Why? She said, "Well, it's not safe to live out there yet. There's no place to land. There's no place to stay." And now, Jacob, in that same way, sends messengers to Esau. Because one of two things is going to happen. They're either going to come back with news, either good or bad, or they won't come back at all. If they don't come back at all, I would say the indication is don't come back. And so Jacob sends messengers. He's testing the waters, as we say, asking to return home. In verse number 6, the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee. And 400 men with him." Now it's kind of an unclear message, isn't it? There's 400 people coming with him. I don't know about you, but if I was going to meet my brother who I'd had a falling out with, and the message came back, he's on his way to meet you too, and he's got 400 men with him, I would probably turn right and go the other way. And so he's stricken with fear. And the following verses indicate that Jacob is afraid. Verse number 7, Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He was distressed. He thought this was going to be the end. But you know what? He had already committed himself that way, and he was going. He was just going to go. He was afraid. He thought that it was going to be a cataclysmic reunion, if you will. But he was going to continue. We notice in notice that Esau had achieved dominion. How many of you have 400 people that will rise up and go with you anywhere? I don't. You know, we like to think we got friends, but if you called 400 friends and said, "Hey, I need you here today," you'd find out how many friends you have, wouldn't you? Well, Esau has achieved dominion. Remember what Isaac told him? He said, your brother is going to rule over you, but at some point, you will achieve dominion. You will achieve independence, and you won't need him. Esau, you don't need the inheritance. It's not going to change your life. Go out there and work. You know how to earn a living. You know how to make it work. You'll thrive, and you'll be so successful that you won't need my money or your brother's money either. And now he shows up with 400 men, or he's on his way with 400 men. He has achieved that dominion. In verse number 7, Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people that was with him, the flocks, the herds, and the camels, into two bands, and said, if Esau come to one company and smite it, the other company which is left shall escape. So he's devised a plan. He's got a strategy where he's going to separate the groups. And that way, half of it, even if half of it's destroyed, he'll still have the other half left. Because in his mind, that is what's going to happen. And notice the word he uses there at the end of verse 8, escape. In his mind, he needs an escape plan. He wants to go home. He's asked to come home, but he needs an escape plan. So he's devised an escape to minimize losses. In verse number 9 through 12, he turns to prayer. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, the Lord which sets to me, return to thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. With my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him. He's praying. What turns you to prayer? What makes you pray? Doesn't fear make you pray? Doctor says, you have to look at that. Prayer. Phone call in the middle of the night. Pray. Something's troubling you. Something starts hurting. Pray. Finances are starting to look bad. Pray. Something crazy happens with the government every day. Pray. Pray. And we start praying. We start praying. We start looking to God. We need answers. And so Jacob turns to God. That God that he had met. That God who had made him promises. That God whom he trusted. And he said, God, you're my God. And I'm leaning on you. I'm trusting in you. I'm scared, but you told me to go back. So I'm going back. But I'm afraid. You see, that's called courage. Being afraid and going anyway. Courage is not going. Courage is going when you're scared to go. Courage is doing that thing that you're afraid to do. And so he prays, he turns to God. In verse 13 it says, he lodged there that same night and took that which came to his hand for Esau, a present for Esau, his brother. And it goes on to describe 200 she-goats, 20 he-goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, and on. So he's got all this, and that's just for Esau. This is just a gift if everything goes well. If everything goes well. So he's got everything separated out, one on the right, one on the left, and now he's separated out another, and he says, this is going to be my offering. This is going to be my peace offering for my brother. And that's not all he's got. That's just what he separated as a gift. And he orchestrates in verse 13 through 23, he orchestrates and aligns them so that Esau will be impressed with his assets, with the stock, with the people. And he sends them in companies. In verse 16, you'll notice it says, put a space betwixt drove and drove. In other words, make it last. Make it last. Don't clump up together where it'll be a quick parade. He said, I want them to be standing there and watch them come and see them from a distance and have to watch the next group from a distance and the next group from a distance. I want them to be impressed. I want them to be delayed. I want them to really take in what it is that he's seeing. And when he asks, whose art thou and where goest thou? Whose are these before thee? Verse 18, then thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. Remember, Jacob has the blessing. Jacob has the birthright. And yet he comes back to Esau with his hat in his hand because he's afraid. He's coming back and he's humbled himself. Thou shalt say, this is, they be thy servant, Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau. And behold, also he is behind us. So he commanded the second and the third and all that followed the droves. And so he thinks by doing this, by saying this is a gift, that Esau will say, wow, he must be rich. Look at all this stuff he's brought. And so he's orchestrated a presentation. And the word it uses there in verse number 20 is to appease Esau. To appease him. To settle him. And that was his plan, is to appease him. In verse number 24, Jacob was left alone and there wrestled with a man until the breaking of the day. He saw that he prevailed not against him. He touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. Now, I'll tell you something. That's something, isn't it? Did Jesus wrestle with this man, with Jacob, all night long? And finally, he said, well, I've been trying to be... he's God. He could do... he could crush him, right? But he's trying to keep it fair, trying to keep it equal. And finally, he says, okay, that's enough. And so he just pulls his thigh out of joint and leaves a hollow in his thigh. It says in verse 26, let me go, for the day breaketh. And Jacob said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face. The name Peniel meaning the face of God. And he blessed him there. And my life is preserved. So Jacob wrestled with Jesus. He's been to Bethel. He prayed. God gave him promise. He's gone on and traveled and found a wife. In fact, he's got two. And he's increased his assets. He's a large corporation enterprise now. And God says it's time to go home. And so he's headed back home. And in order to appease Esau, he lines up this entourage of everything he's got. And when they get to Esau, and Esau says, what is this all about? They said, it's all for you. It's all for you. And Jacob positions himself at the back of the pack. And he puts the family in order of importance as we go to chapter 33. Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came. And with him 400 men. He divided the children to Leah and to Rachel, and unto the two handmaids. He put the handmaids and their children foremost. Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. So he's put them in order of what he would be willing to lose. You know, that's his position. And by the way, as we know, in Jacob's mind at least, Rachel was the more beautiful of his wives. And so he wanted Esau to kind of gradually be more and more impressed as he went. And Joseph being the youngest, of course, he wanted him to see that vulnerability and to have mercy. Verse 3, he passed over before them, bowed himself to the ground 7 times. Until he came near to his brother. So you get this vision. He's bowed. He gets up. He bows again. He gets up. He bows again. He gets out. 7 times. So he's showing that he's in perfect humility before his brother. The number 7, that's perfection. That's the God number. So he's in perfect humility and submission. Verse number 4. Boy, this is great. Esau ran to meet him, embraced him, and fell on his neck. And kissed him, and they wept. They wept. It's good for brothers to dwell together in unity. It's good for us to have harmony. And when there's a conflict or when there's a division, it's good for us to then embrace and let each other know, I love you. We're brothers. Remember the last time that he knew anything about Esau. Esau said, I'm going to kill him. Remember that? I'm going to get as soon as I can. And his mom heard, said, you better get out of here, Jacob. It's time for you to go. But Esau did. He wanted to kill him. And it's just like something Brother Junior was talking about before church. You know, sometimes in the moment, we can't see God's plan. Sometimes we don't have any idea what he's doing, but then we look back. Remember Joseph later on, as his brothers come to him, and what happened? He said, I am Joseph. And they fell on him. He fell on their necks and he wept just like his daddy. See how history repeats itself? And he said, what you intended for harm, God intended for good. We can't see it in the moment. We may not be able to see exactly what God's doing. In Sunday school this morning, we talked about that with Assyria. God said, they're going to come in and destroy it. They don't know they're doing my will. But they are. They don't know they're doing it because I wanted them to do it, because I moved them to do it, but they are. And so we just live for God and trust God, and sometimes we're able to look back then and see, wow, God's hand was in it. But they embraced and they loved each other. Everything's better. It's all good now. And then they get into a little argument, if you will. Look at verse 5. He lift up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, whose are these with thee? He said, the children which God hath graciously given thy servant. The handmaidens came near, they and their children, they bowed themselves. Leah also with her children bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. See, each one, again, according to his losses and according to his value, if you will. Verse 8. And Esau says, what meanest thou by all these grove which I met? He said, these are to find grace in the sight of my Lord. Verse 9. Esau said, I have enough. That's a good feeling, isn't it? Have you ever reached that feeling in your life? Have you yet gotten to that point in your life where you step back and you say, I have enough? You say, well, Brother Derek, I'm not there yet. Yes, you are. You know how I know? Because you give. Because you give. You're generous. You help people. You give to God. You give to God's ministry. But you also help other people. You help family members and sometimes people you don't even like. But you give. You're a giver. Why are you a giver? Because when you look back at what you've got, you say, I have enough. Because we're blessed. We've got so much. God's been so good to us. I had a fellow call me the other day, and I was telling Kendra about it yesterday. And he's one of those that every time he calls, he asks for money. Sometimes he'll text and ask for money. But I always expect when he calls, he's going to ask for money. The other day, I called him back, and we were chatting, and he told me his whole sob story. But you know what? He never did pull the hook. He never did ask for money. And I hung up the phone just very impressed. Kendra said, well, he's probably expecting that you feel sorry for him and give it. But usually he asks for it. But you know what the truth is? I have enough. I'm able to give. You're able to give. We're able to give. We live in the most blessed, richest nation in the world. We've got God's favor on our lives, separate from God's blessing on America, but God has blessed America. We're blessed. And Esau looks at Jacob and he says, I don't need your stuff. We all need to get that way, and that comes from being satisfied with what we have. When we're not satisfied with what we have, that's where the problem is. We got to have more, and we got to have more, and we got to have more, and we overextend ourselves to the point where we can't give. And that's when we get to the point where we start getting greedy and trying to pinch everywhere we can and trying to put in our pockets what we can because we'll never have enough. We need to get to a point in our lives where we say, I have enough. And Esau got to that point. Esau, remember, he's the one that said, I'll kill you. He's the one that said, I have enough. Jacob, remember when Jacob left Laban and all the stuff he was doing with the herds, and he was supposed to be managing the herds, and what was he doing? He was culling, wasn't he? He was taking what he wanted and he was making his healthier, and he'd feed his and wouldn't feed Laban's. Why? Because in his heart he didn't have enough. He was the Christian of the two. He was the supposedly the blessed one and the favorable one of the two. And yet he was the taker, and Esau says, I don't need it. The only reason Jacob wanted to give to Esau is because he was afraid. He was doing it to buy peace. And let me tell you something, you can't buy peace. Peace comes from inside. Peace comes from up above. When we get right with God, when we're in order with God, that's where peace comes from. We can't buy it. And so Esau embraces Jacob and they weep. He says he doesn't need his stuff, but Jacob insists. Verse 10, Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, receive my present at my hand. For therefore I have seen thy face, as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased." He's grateful, isn't he? Oh, he's relieved. Like that feeling I know, oh well, I've heard about it when people are about to get a speeding ticket. And you don't get one. When you go and get your fingerprints run and it comes back clean, you know, all that kind of stuff. He's relieved. He really thought he was going to die. He really thought that he was going to suffer and his family was going to suffer and everything he had built up and everything he had worked for up to that point was going to be just wiped out. He was relieved and he said, "You know what? I've already set it aside for you. Just take it." Esau says, "I don't need it." Jacob said, "Just take it anyway." Esau said, "Okay, I'll take it." In verse number 11, the last phrase, he urged him and he took it. Verse 12, and I love verse 12. And we'll finish there. Esau says, "Let us take our journey. Let us go, and I will go before thee." We see their reconciliation. We see two brothers who were at odds for years, and they're reconciled. Because I know that there are times that we have conflicts. But can there be a better feeling than going to our brother or our sister? Esau said, "I'm going to kill you." Jacob left for his life. The story about getting a wife was just a story. It wasn't about getting a wife. He got two while he was there, but that wasn't really why he went. He was going because he was afraid. He was going because his mom was afraid. But when two brothers who have been at odds, or two sisters who have been at odds, can finally embrace and say, "Hey, I love you. No matter what's in the past, I'm good and you're good." What can be better than that? Because how many of us have walked in conflict, looking over our shoulder, watching every step? And that's what Jacob's been doing all this time. Because if he can get the Paran, so can Esau. He wasn't so far that he was out of Esau's reach. And I'll tell you, if Esau had really wanted to kill him, he'd have gotten him. And Jacob's been looking over his shoulder all this time and feeling guilty for what he'd done all that time. And now, everything's better. And when everything's better, and you can sleep at night and have rest, that's the goal. If you have somebody that you're at odds with, get with them. And make it right. Because it's not worth the conflict in your heart. And sometimes it's easy. And one thing I've noticed, and I'm done with this, most of the time the other person doesn't even know there's a conflict. And you're the only one worried about it. That's the end.